learn the process, learn some of the terminology. It allows me to go back and understand the underwriting and how to source a deal, and then ask the right questions to those people who've done that before I get into the deal.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and I've got Marshall Sykes on the podcast today. Super interesting conversation with Marshall. He's the president and owner of Capitino Investing Group, and he's been in real estate since he has been a kid. His mom and dad built houses. So it's really interesting how he got his start and how actually his dad's investing strategy was actually pretty interesting. So check that out. Marshall was in the Navy and retired and then got into oil and gas, but he's been really focused on multifamily real estate for the past few years and is a general partner over 3,500 multifamily units. So really interesting conversation about raising money in this market and talking to investors, and also how investors can get comfortable and vet a multifamily deal and a multifamily syndicator. So let's get Marshall on the pod. All right. Hey, Marshall, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you on, man.
Hey, Justin, thanks for having me here. It's good to see you today.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. So let's kind of jump in. Give us a quick overview of who you are, how you got started in real estate, and then we'll dig in.
I'm Marshall Sykes. I'm the president of Capitano Investing Group. I've been in multifamily investing for the last 4 years, and I have over 3,500 units now as a partner in them, a small bit of each deal, pretty much. But I really got started in real estate back when I was a teenager. My mom and dad both built houses, and I would help them during the summer. And I really didn't enjoy it by any means, but I learned something from it all the same. And not only on the job site, but you also learned in the living room at home when they started talking finances and the business aspects of it. It was very enlightening to me. And I kind of tucked it in the back of my head. And fast forward, after I got my engineering degree, 10 years in the Navy, I decided I wanted to have some real estate income as well and started buying the single family homes.
Got it. So when you were young, was your dad like a developer, or how did that work?
After he retired from the Army, he decided he wanted to run his own show, kind of thing. Okay. So he started his own business. He would build two houses at a time and sell one and keep one as a rental. He just did what he wanted to do at his own pace, and that worked for him and my mom. They would do everything, like dig the foundations hand by hand, basically spread the concrete, do all the framing, do the block work. I mean, they were really good, except maybe the roofing. And they figured out the drywall was not very lucrative to do yourself, because these guys, the crews can come in and do them like that.
Right.
And it's just more effective for somebody else to do some of the items.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Build two houses, sell one to kind of get the funding kind of for the next one, and then keep one for a rental and just rinse and repeat. That's kind of a brilliant strategy. Where were they doing this?
In North Carolina, which is where he had retired to. They both grew up in North Carolina, so it was a natural progression to get back here and kind of go where they wanted to be and where they had good opportunity to do this.
So you kind of had an education in real estate kind of early on. My education in real estate started 4 years ago, essentially. So you kind of had a very big head start. And you said you went to the Navy for 10 years. Did you kind of come out and just kind of jump back into real estate? Or what did you do post-Navy? And then we'll kind of catch up on what you're doing now.
Yeah, I was a construction manager, basically, in the Navy. Okay. I was a civil engineer, Corps officer. And we would build and maintain the facilities for the bases. So it was all the development, all the planning, design, and construction that went along with that. I stayed in actually 25 years, retired as a captain, and then I went and worked in the oil and gas business. So I was doing real estate investing on the side, if you will. I guess through my family members, they were building houses. My brother was building houses at that time.
So you started out kind of investing as a limited partner, or you were kind of you were working your day job and then investing kind of some of your money into other people's projects.
Well, my brother would build a house for me.
Actually. Oh, got it.
Okay. I would own the house, but I would pay him a builder's fee, basically, that kind of thing. Kept his crews working. He gave me an opportunity to get into real estate. So it was a win-win for both of us.
Got it. So were you keeping those as rentals?
Yeah, I kept them as rentals. So I had a small single family portfolio of rentals. that my sister actually managed for us.
Oh, nice.
Since we were so many, a lot of times we were in California or we were overseas. I mean, it's just, you never know where you're going to be in the Navy or in the oil and gas business. So she manages those for us.
Got it. Sounds like you still own some of those or most of those.
We own about half of those still. I sold a few of them to reinvest in multifamily, but I have sold a few of them.
It's always nice to have a little bit of passive income coming in, even though you're getting paid by the military or you're getting paid by your W-2. It's always nice to have that additional income coming in. Kind of gives you a little bit of foundation to take some risks or invest other places and all that.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly how I thought. My mindset was, hey, I want to have some passive income coming in. And I know it may not come in immediately all the time, but I wanted to have that, especially years in the future, especially when I retire. And so I want to have that opportunity to have that income. And so what it really came into play when I got laid off in the oil and gas business 2 years ago. And so I had my military retirement, but also had some other income with passive income with the real estate. And so I was able to get by. I could take my time to decide if I wanted to go back to work or go into real estate investing full time, which is what I've done.
Got it. So let's unpack that a little bit, because I think that's interesting. And a lot of people that listen to this podcast are a W-2 worker, or they have their own business and they're working really hard. They make decent money, and they're historically, they've been investing in the stock market or a company 401k. And now they're thinking about other options, right? And to your point, you started investing. It's not a flood, right? It's not a get rich quick scheme, real estate investing. It's definitely a slow burn, a slower process, but there's obviously a lot of advantages when you get into it. And you talked about one right there is you got laid off. And a lot of times if you get laid off, your income stops, right? And obviously you had some retirement coming in from the Navy, but you also had this passive income. So I guess talk a little about like that mental stability, financial stability that you had, knowing that you had some income coming from the military, but also this passive income from your real estate.
It's a shocker when you get laid off. I was kind of ready to get laid off, honestly. I knew what was going to happen because you can kind of tell normally if you've been in business for a long time, what's happening with business. And I just looked at it as a unique opportunity. Hey, it's a pause from working. I don't have to go to work.
Yep.
But I can go back if I choose to. I can find another job if I choose to. So I decided, hey, I'm going to do this full time. And that ability to have that passive income really helped me have the right mindset that I wasn't desperate. I was in control. I could take my time and really explore the real estate investing full time. That mindset just really helped me a lot.
I'm guessing that if you didn't have the dual streams of income from the military and from your real estate, you might have had to make what most people do is I got to go find a job tomorrow, right? You just kind of pivot from working and then you just go, my full-time job is to find a job. And luckily, sometimes that doesn't always work out. You kind of take a job just because you need one versus you did it, gave you the flexibility to say, let me take some time, let me pause, let me see what I really want to do. And maybe it was, I really want to go back into oil and gas. And you could have probably found another job, like you said, in oil and gas. Or you could say, hey, let me kind of digest this real estate space a little bit and see if I want to do that full time. And that's what it sounds like you did. So I want to take a quick break. And when we get back, I'm going to talk a little about that transition to full-time real estate and kind of how that all works. So stick around.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
Right. We are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Marshall. And before the break, we were kind of talking about your transition. You were laid off from oil and gas, kind of knew it was coming and kind of were okay with it, right? It sounds like. And then you had some income coming in passively, and now you're in this kind of free space where you wanted to kind of take some time to really understand what it would be like to be full-time real estate. So I guess talk through that transition. You get laid off, you go home, you're like, okay, let's take a pause. And then how did you get into real estate full-time, and what kind of area of real estate did you focus on?
Yeah, at that point in time, kind of like lunchtime meetup with a few friends at work who also were doing investing in real estate. Okay. And so we would talk all the time, it seems like. We had formal meetings once a month, but also talked a lot. And a couple of us were considering joining a mastermind outside of that coaching program, basically, that helped you transition into doing real estate full time. And our focus was on multifamily. Okay. So we looked at a lot of different options for that, because several options, many good options.
Yeah.
So we ended up choosing one that we both enjoyed joining and enjoyed the people there. And so it was just a good fit for us to jump in. And once we did get into that program, it kind of gets you through the door. It allows you to partner with like-minded individuals who are also seeking to buy apartment buildings.
It sounds like you joined like a coaching mastermind group. There's a ton of them out there, right? And when I first started getting into multifamily, you start peeling back the onion and you're like, okay, well, even if I found a 100-unit apartment complex that made sense on paper, right? How do you take one of these big things down? Like, I don't have millions of dollars or the track record necessary to buy them and all that fun stuff. So joining that group, did that kind of give you that toolkit, if you will, to say, hey, let me go find these deals, or at least I have a group of people that I can kind of bounce ideas off of?
Yeah, exactly. I felt like that program really provides the structure. I may not have needed the coaching as much, given my experience, but I needed the structure for sure.
Yeah.
And I get more coaching probably not even realize, you know, it's just in attending the meetings and stuff. But
yeah,
the structure of having the legal team, of having the mortgage broker, the construction team that would go out and do the due diligence on when you're buying a property, or just getting through the loan process and actually doing asset management after you buy the property. So all those things, I think that framework in that program really helps.
Yeah.
And it helps ease everybody and kind of aligns everybody that we can do this together as a team, because you need partners in this business and it takes a team to do it.
Yeah, it definitely takes a village to take down one of these big deals. Very few people are doing it all by themselves, obviously. So I guess, when did you jump into that program and kind of catch us up on what you've been doing up to date? We're recording this kind of early May 2023.
Yeah, I've been in that program just over 2 years.
Okay.
That was an exciting time back in 21, I guess. So there were a lot of things were happening in the business and a lot of deals were happening. So it was easy to get into a deal. So I would want to be in the ones, I kind of made my own criteria what I wanted to do.
Yep.
And who I wanted to partner with. And I would choose the ones I would feel comfortable getting into. And for me, I was raising capital from investors, but okay, also in other ways. But for me, I didn't want to raise capital from others if I wasn't willing to also buy into the deal. So that was one of my criteria. If I was willing to do it, then I was comfortable going out and asking others if they were interested, or just telling them. There was no pressure to invest, but a lot of people are interested in investing and they want to go with a trustworthy product.
I think an important point, I started out that way as well. When you raise money for deals, I always wanted to be right along there with my investors, right? Making sure that they knew that I had enough kind of trust in the group. Because effectively, if you're raising money from people, odds are they're not real estate professionals and they're really trusting you to make sure you're a steward of their money and putting it into the right deal. So you've got to vet the operator, the person that found the deal, because it sounds like you're more on the, let me help raise capital and do some due diligence and some other things versus going out and finding the deals, right? So there's like different kind of parts of the puzzle to take down one of these deals, right? You got to find the deal. Obviously, once you find one, you've got to find the capital to help take it down. It sounds like you're in that second part, right? The, hey, we have a deal. This is what we think it's going to do. This is where it's located, et cetera, et cetera. And then you say, cool, I like you as an operator. I know I can trust you. Let me invest my own capital, but also I'll see if anybody in my investor database is interested in going on the journey with me. Is that kind of where you are?
Yeah, that's kind of where I started for sure. Because I felt like that was the easiest way to get into partnerships.
Yep.
I felt like if I took it, that was the way I can go slow with it, I guess.
Yeah.
Start to learn the process, learn some of the terminology more than I already knew. And then it allows me now to go back and understand the underwriting, understand how to source a deal, and then ask the right questions to those people who've done that. I want to ask them the right questions before I get into the deal.
Yeah, you've got to underwrite the deal yourself, right? You've got to make sure that you trust the numbers, because we're all using Excel docs pretty much. And so if you fat finger a number, that can make a big difference if you forget or add an extra zero, right? So you need to make sure that you trust but validate, or validate but trust. I don't know what the saying is, but you got to make sure that you believe enough in the deal and the operator to make sure that they can hit the targets that they're proposing, right? Talk about your first deal, because obviously it's always my first deal to raise on. I was nervous because obviously you're investing your own capital in the deal, but you're also asking other people to trust you and trust that you've done your due diligence on the operator and the deal itself. So maybe talk about that first deal and how did you kind of approach your friends and family or your coworkers or ex-coworkers, I guess, at this point in kind of giving them the opportunity to invest?
Yeah. So the first deal, you're excited to be in the deal because you've been learning a lot about being in deals and being partners. And so I was in this deal, this 100 units or so apartment building complex. So Mike really was raising capital at that point. I asked a bunch of questions and got into the deal and talked to a few friends and family, and they were interested in investing. And so there's a lot of different ways to make money in this. And one of them, you get your distribution, cash flow distribution, and periodically, monthly or quarterly or whatever. Yep. But the first year or two, that's, I found out really the pro forma might say you're going to get something, but it's really not as lucrative because usually something, some kind of contingency comes up, or maybe the leases are harder than you think they're going to be to get lease ups.
Right.
At the same time, you may not be making there, but depreciation with your taxes, you're making off appreciation within the market. And then we usually renovate. We do a value add strategy to renovate and raise the rent. So all of those have been very effective, but definitely some lessons learned on the first deal for sure.
And so at this point, you've been doing it for a couple of years. I guess, what type of markets are you looking at or did you invest in to date? Like, talk about maybe where you are in your journey, how many deals, all that stuff.
Yeah, I've been in 14 deals as a general partner, and I've invested mostly in the Sun Belt, I guess. And I'd like to stick to the 200,000 population or more for cities.
Yeah.
I don't mind going to a smaller city. I live in a smaller city like that, but I mean, it's smaller than 50,000, but I want to know that general partner's living there and knows the market,
right,
you know, firsthand, you know, not just somebody who's looked it up on and kind of been there a few times. I want them to live there. I don't mind doing that. But for the most part, I look at the population. It also has to be increasing, as well as the job growth has got to be there. And those are the big three that I look for. But also, is it landlord friendly? What's the eviction process like? Because a lot of times these apartments we're trying to renovate, and part of it is we need to evict people, unfortunately, if they're not paying. And so that process is very difficult in different locations.
And I guess, so you're kind of in the Sun Belt, which is, I would say, the majority of people in the syndication world, that's their kind of target area is the Sun Belt. As I mentioned, we're recording this in early May 23. What's your take? Deal flow has been super slow in the first quarter plus of 23, naturally with high interest rates and all of that. What have you been seeing in the deals that you're in? Like, how has the shift in interest rates kind of impacted some of those deals?
Unless you have a fixed rate loan, that interest rate has really been a big factor. Most of the time we buy these with a variable interest rate because there's some other factors involved. So it's not because we want a variable interest rate, but because you get construction dollars with a bridge loan, you can get construction dollars, maybe $3 million worth of money, do the renovations that you need to do.
Yep.
Whereas a fixed loan is not going to be able to give you that. You're going to raise $3 million more. And then the return on investment for investors is probably going to go down, probably not going to be worth it.
Yep.
The other thing is, if you do a fixed loan and you want to sell it 3 or 4 or 5 years later, you're going to pay a big penalty for that to sell. So another hit on your investment.
Yep.
So that's why bridge loans are popular, but the interest rate has impacted, I would say, 1/3 of the properties that I'm in that are impacted. Well, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 of them that are harder than the others. Part of it is where the market is. Can you get the lease up? I mean, it's a couple of factors. It's not just the interest rate. Sometimes it's always there's another factor involved as well on properties that are maybe hit by that harder than others.
Yeah, I mean, you can underwrite a deal with a 5% interest rate. And then if you wake up the next morning after you get the deal done and interest rates are 7.5, unless you bought a rate cap, you have no protection, right? And so your mortgage payment, your interest payment went up 20, 30, 40 grand and can really skew into your ability to operate a deal. So I'm wondering, obviously, with deal flow slower than normal, what are your investors saying? Like, obviously, you've got investors in deals. Are people, what's their appetite to get into new deals? If you had a deal that's still penciled, that still hit the metric that you target, are investors on the sidelines or are they like, hey, I'm ready to go. Let's get into another deal. Like, how are their feelings right now?
I think you're going to find both right now, but there are some investors who've reached out to me that are ready to do another deal.
Yeah.
I think it is harder to find a deal right now. But if you find one that does pencil, it's a great time to get in because the interest rates are already high. It's probably going to go lower for the most part over the next 2 years. And so it's a good time to get in. And I think investors see that. I think there are going to be some opportunities for better deals even by the end of the year in 23.
I think there's definitely going to be some distress or stress out there from people that bought deals over the last 2 years that, to your point, are on variable rate debt. And maybe they didn't, rates weren't a concern, so they didn't buy a rate cap. And so now they're struggling, or their investors are like, hey, we need to exit this deal because I want my money back, kind of a thing. So I've already heard from a few brokers and property managers that one property manager reached out and said that their owner that is that they're operating their property for is stressed. And so they might be open to quote unquote off market deal. So I think that that could ramp up if interest rates continue to climb the rest of this year. So to your point, if you can find a deal in this market that pencils out and hits the metrics, that could be a slam dunk moving forward. Just because to your point, if the interest rates stay flat or go down, which is likely, then you're going to be made in the shade. So I think there's still deals to be had. It's just they're going to be far and few between at this point, unlike the last 2 years.
Yeah, definitely slower for sure. We pencil out some, but in the end, we don't do it right now.
Yeah, you got to be conservative is a word that is thrown around and used a lot in the multifamily syndication space. Every syndicator has conservative underwriting. And that definition definitely sways one way or the other, depending on who you talk to. But you have to be conservative in underwriting now, just because we don't know exactly what's going to happen, just with the interest rates, but also with the general economy and being a little bit sluggish. So yeah, it's an interesting time for sure to be in the multifamily space. If you kind of put your W-2 hat back on and think about people that are listening to this podcast that are sitting in a job, they may love it or hate it, but they make good money and they really want to find other avenues to put their money. And other than just the stock market or a 401k, like what do you think is a good first step for somebody that is, maybe they've got 50, 100 grand sitting in the bank that is just kind of collecting 0.1% interest. What do you think is a good first step to kind of get enough information to think about investing in a multifamily syndication?
Yeah, I think what I would do, if let's say you have 100,000 and you want to invest that, I would definitely do two different deals. Your risk is less. I mean,
yeah, makes sense.
You're spreading your risk, basically. You're also getting an opportunity to look at different markets if you invest in two different markets, two different operators, maybe. I don't know. But I did that with my first 150,000 I invested. I did three different deals in three different markets with the same guy that was raising the money, but he had three different operators that he was raising with or partners. Okay. So I got to see firsthand how the three different operators manage their properties, as well as what kind of monthly reports I got, what they say about the property, how did the properties perform, that kind of thing. So it was quite interesting. I think that's a great way to quickly learn more about the market and investing in multifamily.
Yeah, it's just like anything. A lot of people talk about diversification, right? And diversification applies to multifamily. Don't necessarily want to put all your eggs in one location basket, right? You don't want to put all of your investment in Austin, Texas or Phoenix or anything like that, even though they're great markets. You want to diversify because something could happen that we don't know about, right? And could negatively impact that market. And if you've got all your money there, it's just like putting all your money in one stock. If that stock goes to zero, then you're out all your money. So no, it makes sense. And I guess, you know, one thing I wanted to touch on a little bit more is just your outlook, I guess, for 2023 and maybe early 24. Are you still actively looking for deals? I know that you're more on the capital side, but it sounds like you still evaluate deals, whether they're from operators that are sending you deals to potentially raise on. But yeah, maybe give us a little bit of insight in your crystal ball, if you will, to, you know, what 2023 is going to be like.
Well, I think, as you said, it's been slow so far, but every day I get deals from brokers to look at.
Yeah.
Usually they're not usually in my market, but I have five or six I need to kind of review for the North Carolina market, which is where I'm trying to focus on right now. But also I have been working with other operators who have sourced a deal and they're looking for capital raisers and other partners. I've looked at them. They've got to meet pretty strict criteria for me right now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to stay with the bigger markets at this point, just to make sure that there's seems like there's a little bit less risk in those markets for me right now. But so that's kind of where I'm going with that. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities toward the end of in the second half of 23. There's going to be more opportunities and you'll see more deals at that point, I think.
Yeah. And I guess you mentioned kind of your criteria. What are some good things that people listening to this, if they're like, hey, I want to start to dip my toe in the water and maybe find people like us that help people invest in these syndications, what do you think are some good questions that you should ask people like us so that they can feel comfortable about how we evaluate deals and how we talk to operators that are finding deals? Like, how do you think they should start to ask some questions to make them feel comfortable or get some of their answers and some of their questions?
Well, I think one of the big things is they need to be able to trust the operator. And so you can ask questions that help solidify that trust. You know, usually when somebody's investing in a deal, they have a webinar, the operation team is going to have a webinar to present the deal, right?
Yep.
And that's a great time to ask questions. And you want to understand if you can trust them or not. And if you can trust the market, it's not just them, it's the market, but the operator can make a big difference. So you want somebody who has the experience, has the ability to overcome obstacles, because there will be some, most likely. Almost every project, every property has those. You want somebody who has the structure in place and the ability to overcome those obstacles throughout 3 to 5, 6, 7 hold that you have on the property.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. You've got to know, like, and trust, right? They've got to know, like, and trust us enough to make sure that we're validating the operators that are finding these deals. And obviously, there's a lot of communication that has to happen between somebody saying, hey, I'm interested in real estate, and let me wire you $100,000 for this deal. So I want to kind of transition to the final triple threat, three pack of questions that I ask every guest. So what is one piece of advice that got you started or helped you on your real estate journey?
I think one of the biggest pieces of advice is to get started. You can't time the market all the time. I mean, you've got to get started and make sure the numbers work for you for that particular time. It may not be a stellar deal, but you learn so much in the process that you can still go forward and gain from the deal.
Yeah.
Even if it stays at hardly any gain at all.
Yeah. What is it? You can't time the market. It's all about time in the market, kind of a thing. So just get started.
Don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait.
There it is. That's even better. I like that. Awesome. So what's your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Let me see what I'm trying to read here. Building a Story Brand. So that's
okay. Is that Donald Miller?
Yeah, Don Miller. And I'm not the best storyteller, and I don't incorporate enough stories in my talks, I guess. But that's one that gives you a framework of 7 different tips to gives you an opportunity to tell a story.
Yeah.
I've really got some good insight from that one.
I read that book and really enjoyed Donald Miller. I think he's got another one out there too. But yeah, Story Brand is definitely a good one for sure. All right, last question. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of the passive income from real estate, what would you do?
I'm basically at that point. So I'm talked to a guy this week actually about that, because he's a few years older than me.
Okay.
And I want to get his advice on how he transitioned to retirement life, right?
Yeah.
And he already gave me a little teaser. He's like, well, you got to stay active. So what I'm doing to stay active is to stay in real estate, do real estate investing, right? So it's kind of a part-time, full-time job for me. So sometimes it's full-time, sometimes it's part-time, but I have my freedom of movement, the freedom of my time, to where I can go do what I want to do, and then I can work when I'm needed or when I'm ready to
work. When you want to. Yeah. You can lean in or lean out as needed. You don't need to do it if you don't want to, or you want to take a 2-week vacation and go sit on the beach somewhere, or you live in Pinehurst so you can go golfing for a couple of days and be fun. So
yeah, I just got back 2 weeks in France.
There you go. So awesome. Well, Marshall, man, thank you very much for being on the podcast. This was a lot of fun to dig into your story, and hopefully people got a lot out of it. So thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Justin, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, I hope everybody took something away from that episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. Thank you.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.